All right. Well, we've got a wicked cool show coming up here. We're going to talk about a ton of things with VMworld. We're going to start off. We're going to talk about the VMworld VFit run. So if you're keen on the run, hang tight. So the first 15 minutes, we're going to talk about VFit run, the daily run group that's going to be happening at San Francisco, is happening in the Moscone Center. So go to discoposse.com. You can find out details of that. And then we're going to dig even deeper. We're going to get into the tech. We're going to talk about other community events going on at the VMworld show. So jump in at about 15 minutes and beyond. We're going to nerd out. Before then, you'll hear about the VFit. You can hear about Coffee Exchange and lots more. So enjoy the show. Welcome everyone to the Disco Posse Podcast. My name is Eric Wright. I'm going to be your host today. Don't forget to keep following along. You can go to discopossepodcast.com, get show notes, links, and more. You can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. And with that, let's get started. All right, and we're here again. And thank you very much. This is another Disco Posse Podcast. We call this the shared cast in a way. Super happy because I get to welcome back our regular guest, someone who I'd love to actually, I wish we could just co-host and do this all the time. Rob Hirschfeld, you know him as Zeacle, you know him as the latest shiny, you know him as a lot of things. He's Rakken, he's community, he's awesome. Rob, this is a blast. We're going to talk about VMworld stuff. It's kind of timely. So if you're listening a few weeks behind, it's not going to make as much sense. However, let's hope we catch it live or early. But there's more than just event stuff we're going to talk about. Rob, let's reintroduce yourself, and we're going to talk about a bunch of VMworld activities and what's going on in the world right now.
Looking forward to it. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and one of the things that's interesting to me is this will be my first VMworld. Which is a long journey. I've been using VMware since 1999. So
first time caller, last a long time user.
That's exactly right. I sort of dove right into cloud and then we've been coming back to it. My name's Rob Hirschfeld. I've been in cloud communities for quite some time, OpenStack and Kubernetes. And then my company specializes in bare metal infrastructure. So we actually run a project called Digital Rebar and then extend it like crazy for production to automate the physical layer, the underlay, if you will, for what VMware sort of forgot to do well when they built out their infrastructure. That's Rakken in a nutshell. We fixed the hardware automation piece.
Yeah, it's funny. We were sold the idea that you only just do this once by hand and then the rest is easy. But I'm like, wait a second, what if you didn't have to do that? Right. We were sold the idea that it's okay to do a little more the old school way. And then I like that you've closed the door on the need for that at all. And much more. I don't want to oversimplify.
These are battle scars for us from the OpenStack days. My team founded a project called Crowbar, which was the first OpenStack installer. And we just ran around like bleeding out the eye sockets because every time we did an install, it was broken. And it wasn't OpenStack's fault. You and I've talked about this in the past. The problem is that automating the physical layer is so hard, people just would skip it and they'd go straight to the, you know, put in the floppy disks and then figure life will improve after they get through that first part. And we found that if you fix that first part, everything you built on top of it's better. It's shaky foundations. The Jenga tower of IT infrastructure is not a healthy place to be, and not to Amazon's benefit.
But yeah, that's right. Somebody wins in that one. We could say that people were worried about the snowflakes of hardware, so instead they put OpenStack on top and created snowflakes in software. So we've got VMworld coming up, VMworld 2019. It's back in San Francisco. I wanted to get you on because one of the most exciting things I love to do outside of technology is to be able to really, take conversations and have great opportunities to hang out with people outside of the normal, you know, hey, we're in a booth or we're at an event or we're on a sales, you know, even when you're at community tech events, it's a lot of times you still have like a lot more product focus and whatnot. So one of my favorite things to do at events is we do a daily run group. And I say we, because you and I have been doing them together for a long time. I started this years ago. I called it the hashtag VFit because, you know, everything VMware had to have a V in front of it. And so I just, you know, with a couple of friends, just, you know, I met somebody who I'd never met in person, but knew through Twitter. And he's like, hey, he was from the UK. And I said, hey, well, I'm going for a run tomorrow morning. He's like, oh, I'd love to go for a run. You know, how far do you want to go? I said, I'm just going to go probably like 5K, nothing crazy. So I've got a friend who wants to join. Is that great? I said, sure thing. So we went that morning. It was Sunday morning because I always used to go in a day early and really had a blast just running down the Embarcadero in San Francisco. It's a beautiful view, nice, gentle breeze, great temperatures, and just great conversation with folks that I would never get a chance to hang out with. And once we get to the event center, of course, you're like in community and crowd mode. So it's hard to really have meaningful conversations. And so this VFit thing happened. And at the end of that run, we all said like, hey, this is really cool. Do you want to do it again tomorrow? And so the next day we did, and we found a couple of other people. And then at the second day we said, hey, do you want to do it again tomorrow? And ultimately we did, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And actually I was there until Friday. And so collectively I think we had like 8 people each day, which doesn't seem huge, but to have like a random collection of 8 people, often different, every single day to go out. And so I made it kind of a part of my event. Every time I went somewhere, I wanted to do this. And VMworld was kind of like my main event back in the day. And so that's how VFit became a thing. And next thing you know, I was going to the OpenStack Summit. And I think I started the idea, and then I saw that you were already rolling out. And so we went together and you know, we've co-chaired a lot of community runs, which has been a blast.
With that, and then you have it, you actually do it as a on the agenda item at
Interop. Oh yes. Interop. Yeah.
Which is great.
That's the ultimate win, I think, is that when people see the value of adding like healthiness, we're adding mindfulness and we're adding, you know, yoga and other things into these events. So it's kind of cool that the team at Interop, huge shout out to the UBM folks and all the organizers there. They said, hey, since you do this all the time and a lot of people seem to show up, do you want to put it on the event in the actual, you know, agenda? And I think we had like 35 or 40 people with
that
us on
huge, that was a huge crowd. And like IBM Think does a run that's really, really good. I've done that a couple times. Then Opcon traditionally has done runs. And for people who don't run much, it can be intimidating. It's, you know, usually the 5Ks are pretty short, and there's always somebody who's, you know, going to run at your pace. So don't stress on, you know, you're not a runner. You're not Ben Keeps. You don't have to keep up with him.
That's right.
He's an ultra marathoner, and Eric and I both, I think, are like, Ben, you have to wake up 2 hours before we do to even get to the, you know, but to show up at the pace we want to run. People wake up and run with him too. So you just gotta let people know.
I sort of as a poke, I saw that Ben was going to be at an event. And again, for folks that should follow Ben Keeps on Twitter, he's at Ben, BenKeeps. Ben's super good person and a great analyst, smart fellow, good conversationalist, and runs a lot, like a lot. We said like, hey, Ben, since I see you around, maybe you want to go for, the real win would be if you join us for a run. And so
you want to join his cool down.
yeah, that's right. And so I joked when he got to the start of our run, and I said to everybody there, we probably had a good like about a 10 or 12 person crowd. And I said, for folks that don't already know Ben, he's probably already been out for 10K. And he said, he goes, 24, actually. so he'd done 24 as a warm up to our little 5K. And then I think he hung on and went for another 10 after we finished. So he's a different level, but
once again, we're going to be casual. It'd be so bad.
It's so fun because we, We have people that, because we're getting a reasonable group of people that go out all the time, you get walking groups, you get, you know, fast run groups, you get midstream run groups. And personally, I always say this, I said, I'm not a runner. I'm just a person that runs. Like I don't train. I couldn't honestly tell you what my like minute per mile pace is, first, because I'm Canadian and I don't know what a mile is. And secondly,
metric minutes too, it throws everything else off.
That's right. So I kind of think if we go at the pace that we go, and usually you have a pretty common pace, and like you said, it's 5K, no one's really going to get upended. Like, it's not painful, and we do it on purpose to be that way, so that it's fun to join, and you know, and again, people join multiple days. It's a blast.
And if you want to do more, sometimes the group will sort of do an extra lap, and if you're a 10K-er, then that's fine. I like it because if you're in the run, you're breathing, and so it sort of forces you to shut up. If you're on a soapbox, it's harder to soapbox when you have to breathe and run. So it leads to more back and forth conversations.
Yeah, it's how every podcast should go. Is there's some person takes a turn talking while everybody else catches their breath, and then they develop great thoughts and replies, and then they finally work up the breath to be able to give them back.
Podcast 5K, we should give it a shot. Although I think
it would be a lot of thump 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 heavy breathing and craziness.
We're not going to do it.
No. But so the point of, so VMworld 2019, it's in San Francisco. I will be there early in the sense that I'm there before the event begins. I'm coming in on Saturday, which is a day ahead. So as a result, I'm actually going to do the run from Sunday morning onward, which is a blast because I'm going to commit to do it every day, which it always feels like a good idea 4 weeks out or 8 weeks out. And it'll hurt when I'm there, but it'll be okay. So the official, official, unofficial VFIT runs will be from Saturday or for Sunday, the 25th through the 26th, 27th, 28th, and the 29th, or maybe a straggling group. I'm actually not going to be there. I'm taking a red eye back on the final day. But at any rate, we'll have runs every day. I'll post them on my website. If you go to discoposse.com/VFIT, you'll get to the VFIT page, and it gives all the details, including the run route. We go at the end. We usually stop for a blue bottle to grab a coffee, and then people are generally staying in the area, so it's very easy. We start from the Moscone Center, so Moscone South. We meet every day, and we roll out. I'm aiming, I believe, we usually would make it at 7. We may have to go a little earlier, depending on keynote times and such. So I think it'll be 6:45. But we've met a lot of interesting people along the way, and I'm going to put you on the spot, Rob. Like, what's the difference between, the run experience and how it enhances your community and conference experience?
Oh my goodness. I mean, besides just starting the day on the right track, I have people that, I have so much deeper relationships with, and we've, sometimes we'll solve real problems. you get really good, deep experience with that. And those are actually the more lasting relationships I have from the conferences. Beautiful runs.
That's the amazing thing is the scenery is great. I mean, we do this in Las Vegas for the events there. So I'm actually going to be doing it for AWS reInvent as well. And I do it so that we go to the sign every day, because it's like a big thing. People come from all over, and they want to go and take a picture by the Welcome to Las Vegas sign. So it's close enough to the hotels. We always do it. And people always ask, like, oh, if you're going for more than one day, like, well, where's the run tomorrow? I'm like, it's to the sign. Cause somebody may not have been there and they want to go, and they'll be the first time runner tomorrow. And so it's.
and as you and I know, you can wander off the beaten path and get trapped into a hotel security cul-de-sac pretty quickly if you're not careful.
That's right. So I really enjoy San Francisco for this. There's I won't enjoy the fact that I'm going to submit an expense report that's going to be a seed funding round for another startup for having to be there for 5 straight days. It's an expensive city, unfortunately, to be in for a conference, but it is beautiful if you find it. Interesting town, that's for sure. You get some mixed reactions on us going back to San Francisco. And I rarely would say that I would use the phrase, boy, I miss when VMworld was in Las Vegas. Only because it's cheap. Everything's easy to get to. And, I know what the temperature is going to be.
For as a conference city, Vegas definitely has an appeal. And it's cheap.
You're going to be at VMworld. You've got, like you said, this is the first time. So what's the prompt to bring you there for the first time around?
That comes back to the VMware integrations that Rackin's been doing. Has got us and some of our customers very excited. So it's time for us to put in a presence. People who know my background are, I've been an open source guy for a long, long time. And so I sort of, approached VMware skeptically, but for on-premise and enterprise, they're crushing it. They really, really are. And they provide a lot of value. So I don't mean to be cagey. I'll tell you exactly what we're doing. We are literally doing zero touch bootstrap of the physical layer for VMware clusters. So they're building a vCloud formations where you have to feed in a whole bunch of information about your infrastructure to build the cluster. We actually can do that whole process, feed it, let the cluster build, but we're going a step further and we're actually extending the digital rebar workflows into ESX. So you'll be able to do like join cluster and remove from cluster and do a whole bunch of physical layer extensions to the vCenter and VMware family. Super powerful. And it's the type of thing, it's fire and forget type technology, right? You turn stuff on and walk away and that's the last you worry about it. On commodity gear, right? This is like the Nutanix experience, but one white box, bring your own hardware type stuff.
And I wish we didn't just like squeeze this amongst the conversation about running this is a crazy cool, this is a really powerful opportunity for folks to dig in. Number one, they should know, or at least look at what you've been doing, what your platform does, what the community wrapped around it does. This is cool. And this is a problem that I've been looking to solve. And I've used a lot of haphazardly crafted scripts, and I've then borrowed from others, glued together stuff, run stuff on the cloud just so that I can avoid the physical tier. And this now kind of cuts down a lot of that stuff. And for folks, I would say probably 4 years ago when people were really starting to dig in more and they were talking about what they were doing with, it was vCloud Air at the time, right? And this whole idea of vCloud Air, I go, sorry, it's more than 4 years. 4 years is when it died. So 8 years ago, I guess, vCloud Air was spinning up, getting a lot of heat, and they were using Puppet to do the kind of some of the initial tier. And in fact, probably under the covers, you were a part, whether you realized it or not, on what was doing the physical layer. Because it was going to be probably Crowbar running underneath it, because it was Razor, I think, actually, that was driving some of the.
This is the vendors, for a variety of reasons, get involved with this stuff, the hardware vendors. And so VMware tries to offload it to the hardware vendors, and then they want to inject their tooling and their sort of very opinionated way to build this stuff. And it's not operationally. Not a DevOps, sort of automation mindset. It's a configure hardware mindset. And that's the difference, right? It's not just about configuring. It's actually about workflowing the systems together. And every time I say workflow, a bell rings.
The funny thing is, I've authored a little miniature guide, which is going to come out shortly by VMworld, luckily, with O'Reilly. And I know, it was around, it's a Terraform, was the focus for this one. It was DevOps with Terraform for VMware, and really kind of higher up in the layer of like, how do you do VM lifecycle management? and use Terraform as a way to do that. And because they've opened the door to some of the, like the Terraform cloud, and they've made it free for community and a few other things, it was good timing. And so it just worked out. I needed something to be able to write on. It was a meaningful topic to a lot of folks that I've talked to. Only because you hadn't announced this yet, Rob.
However, there's plenty of time yet to write some books. So is there something that's catching your eye on this in this VM world?
This is going to be the theme is definitely going to be what's getting done. I think as a company, they're looking to move away from the tech to the outcomes, which is kind of cool. I love that we've, as an industry, have figured that out. And the tech people have caught up to it too. They've realized, like, I'm not proud that I wrote some 98 line Power CLI script to, you know, deploy vCenter. Like it doesn't need to be done that way anymore. And your team and other folks are tackling that problem, like, further down the stack, which is awesome. So I think VMware is going to, they're going to be all in, you know, with a very strong cloud story, the multi-cloud story, they need to be able to kind of impress upon the industry that you need to have VMware in every layer of your stack. And so that's important. And obviously NSX was a big, big focus over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's become pretty normal, right? Like, people say, like, oh, well, how come they don't market it as much? And like, well, because it's kind of part of the deal. It's probably in every ELA anyways. And so they're really moving to, like, what are you actually trying to get done that made you think that this was a tool you needed to buy? And so we're going to see much more outcome-based stuff. We're going to see Cloud Foundation all over the place. It'll be interesting to see how much they're going to play the containers, you know, obviously with the Heptio acquisition, there's going to be.
That's what I'm very interested in seeing, how they're pivoting their messaging to embrace Heptio or not. Because from our perspective, that's, you know, we have a very nice little Kubernetes community zero touch builder. Be interesting to see if we can collaborate on the Heptio side and use the bits and the non-distro that they've put together.
I think that's a big win. I mean, obviously they would love for you to use PKS because of a parent level corporation tied back to that. Ooh. And they've got some sort of easy integrations, easy access to other engineers that work at Pivotal that can help make it work. It's not necessarily that it's out of the box, but they're willing to toss people at it to help customers adopt, which I think, you know, again, if you're going to look at adopting and you're going to get people involved anyways, you know, open the door a little wider and let's just see what community driven stuff is out there. Not that I'm detracting from what PKS can do or whatever, but again, you know, it's like once the door is open, open it wide and really look at what the requirements are and what your outcome is. If your outcome is to stick with a vendor and whatnot.
Great. Well, I think you need to decide how you're coming at it, right? VMware for me and VMworld is really an infrastructure and an operations focus show, right? That's sort of the mindset. You know, Pivotal's really been a developer company, and it's, you know, I don't know yet because I haven't been of what the developer footprint is for VMworld. You know, to me, I get very comfortable in an operator. In an operator place where somebody wants to talk about how to make stuff work, not just build it.
Yeah, I think you've got a beautiful sweet spot story of just your personal background and obviously what you can bring from a platform view and just your community understanding of what's really going out in the enterprise. And it's cool. Mm. So last year there was much more, like there was a VMware Code is their kind of like their public, you know, push towards embracing more developers. You're seeing the shift for people who were called technical marketing engineers. Now they're called cloud advocates. Like, oh, okay. So evangelist is advocate's the new evangelist or marketing engineer. So they're
done some shows about that exact thing. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And oh, so this is, I hate to make fun of this one, but I saw it. I said, apparently we've jumped the shark on DevOps because the latest Kubernetes white paper that VMware put out says that it's SRE ops is the new DevOps. I'm like,
I don't even know that you and I have this conversation like 2 years ago and more or less predict that. I thought we did.
Yeah. So I like SRE ops. Just, I'm not quite sure if that's actually a phrase we should ever use.
That's a nope. Nope. Yeah.
But the point is they're you're seeing the up leveling of administrators and architects, that they're figuring out that code's important to their life, even if they're dabbling. It doesn't need to be all in like learning Go or whatever. Like, they just need to be able to understand what code's doing so they can embrace other platforms that are using code layer stuff.
So, and there's a whole, the whole infrastructure is code movement, infrastructure is software movement. That's its own topic. Excellent one. I suspect you will hear that, you know, software defined data center and infrastructure as code and a whole bunch of marketing gloss. I'm interested in meeting the pig, not the lipstick. So, we can do a wrap show and a wrap up show. We can do it in wrap, I suppose. That would be more painful than the running show. And talk about how some of that stuff played out, but it's automating infrastructure, which is what operators really have to do, requires them, you know, us to learn code and code principles and use GitHub. And we've been starting to bandy around a term that I really like called the continuously integrated data center.
Ooh, I like that.
That brings together. So maybe that was where I should have started from and all this stuff, but that's, if you put together all the disparate pieces that Rackn's building, the infrastructure as code, the workflow, got to ring the bell. There's my bell. The workflow and other pieces, all of that turns into this continuously integrated data center concept, which we get very excited about. Day two. It's a day two operations thing.
Yeah, and this is what's cool, and I implore folks, you know, when they're out walking the floor and they're talking with the people, it's such a great peer opportunity as well. So I'm also in like the VMware vExpert, which is like kind of a peer community for folks that, you know, either write or talk about or evangelize VMware stuff. So I've been doing that for a long time. I think I'm like 5 or 6 or 7 year7 years as a vExpert, which is super cool.
Some congratulations.
Thanks. And, you know, it's because even where, you know, I did more in different communities, people still saw that I was at both sides, you know, being able to help to tell the story. And really we're bringing people between communities. So you go to reInvent and VMware will be a like triple diamond platinum, whatever the like top level, you know, sponsorship is, they'll be that because of VMware Cloud on AWS. And obviously that's a big drive. So there's another one. So, I'm not going to talk deeply about my opinions on VMware Cloud and AWS. I really want to sit through the show and hear where things are at. Cause it's, you know, obviously customer accounts are going to be important. I've heard some really good things. I look at the TCO calculator and it kind of doesn't line up for me for certain things, but it's super valuable for other things. So I really want to dig in more on real active use cases and talk to some more people that are using it. And I was heading down the road to do my certification. So I understand the platform, the technology side, but I really want to dig into where people are doing cool things, which is what matters.
Do you think VMware is going to highlight edge stories?
They will. That was the thing. This is timely that you're here because, you know, your work in edge and what VMware is kind of like trying to really make sure that they're very strong in edge. They're also, I mean, they're like triple diamond sponsors at like blockchain conferences. They're doing everything. Like they're at every conference because
they're an on premises IT infrastructure company. I know they really want to be cloud too, but you know, that's they have a huge, they're in every single enterprise.
Right. It's like we always joke about, you know, when someone asks you, you know, how many customers do you walk into that are using AWS? It's easy. It's 100%, right? It's in one way or another, it's 100%. Mm-hmm. And then the same goes for the VMware side of the world. Like even if they're Hyper-V and SCVMM, inevitably it's sitting beside either a soon-to-be unused or soon-to-be-used VMware environment. It's even at reInvent, every time someone come up, they're like, oh, yeah, we're cloud-first. Where they would tell these amazing stories. We're really digging in on serverless. I'm like, cool. So where's the rest of your like back office operation stuff running? Oh, we have four giant VMware data centers. I'm like, ah,
that's right. And that's cool. But I'm tired of us shaming people for this. I want to fix the problems that make that that lead into this idea that Amazon is better at operating data centers than everybody else, because it's not. They are. They're really good at it, but it could be done better by everybody else too. It's time for us to fix that. It's I like to say, there isn't some secret mineral that exists in Seattle that Amazon has the only mine of, called operations Inium.
That's right.
Makes them have this lock on operational capability. It's not, what they've done can be replicated. And it shouldn't have to be replicated at their scale in order to take advantage of it. It just, right. We talk to people who take 2 to 3 months to bring new servers online. And if you think about, the cost of that time gap, not to mention the effort that it takes to do that, but just the server sitting there waiting three months to be turned on and attached to a cluster. If you can do that in minutes, that's a huge delta. It makes me sad to think that we've put these barriers in there for something that should ultimately be pretty straightforward to do. Not simple, but straightforward.
No, and I think it's, again, it's the operational practice. I mean, I think when I hear that story, and I hear it all the time, and I see it in real environments all over the place, like we talk about everybody's all in on DevOps and cloud and this and that. I'm like, no, it's like there's everything is going on in every data center and in every environment. Hybrid is just standard because there's some mix and match of hardware, of public and private, of public and public. There's all these different mixes and matches.
And this to me is, as much as the Kubernetes crowd is very hot right now and they're doing a lot of great work and creating some portable, platform that people can use, it doesn't lessen the need or the import of having, a virtual machine infrastructure as an abstraction layer where you need it. I was talking to somebody who was saying, even if I put Kubernetes directly on Metal, which, we're excited to talk about, the form factor of the machines doesn't match, right? So if you have a terabyte of RAM, running Kubernetes in that environment is not going to scale. You're going to have to partition it into smaller units. And so no matter what you're doing, you're looking at, a layered infrastructure for now, potentially for a long, long time. Even in edge deployments, if you've got, a 4-machine cluster, you might need to virtualize it and create a 20-machine cluster just because of the way you're distributing the applications and the need to isolate operating systems from the, the 4 hosts might only have 1 operating system on it. It's just, it's not bad. It's life. We just have to do a better job with it.
And I think of even today, there's still going on the classic old practice that I used to love. People got a burn in, right? You'd get a brand new piece of hardware, you'd light it up.
You made your toy super soft, the classical practice.
and you'd leave it running for like 4 days or 5 days, and they called it burn in, like as if on day 2, more parts break. I suppose if you're going to run production stuff on it, if that one server is going to cause a grand outage, you burn in isn't your problem. Architecture is your problem.
Stories from the field. there is an extent to which we find people, their operational practice is, not finding things early causes a lot of very expensive toil. Is the right word for it. It's super common for people to just get a network interface reversed or a bad NIC cable or a bad network cable or a RAM DIMM being unseated. And if you don't catch those things early, building infrastructure on top of that is going to always, you're going to always have a fly in that ointment. And you, So I agree with you, you know, burning in a machine for 48 hours, you know, might find some infant mortality stuff. Nowadays, not as much, but if it finds a misconfiguration in your hardware or a bad drive or a, you know, bad cable or something like that, that time is really valuable, especially if it's automated and it just happens over the weekend. But
right. Yeah. Well, and so this really highlights that if we've moved the automation further up the stack, then why in goodness name wouldn't you go down to old team underlay and tell them that they can have a better day? Because they can do this stuff. And even like the theme that I'm building for the Turbonomic team booth, you know, where we always have these idea of thematic approach stuff, is really this thing of, you know, I'm doing this because something else is being automated. I'd rather be doing X, right? And that's where people, you know, I used to hear stories, and we shared some of them, like customer events. People were like, oh yeah, well, I almost died in a car crash because at 4 o'clock in the morning I was going in and we'd been all day, and then we'd do a server implementation, and it was like, oh, it's terrible. Like they're really heart-wrenching stories in the end about stuff that people are going through, and automation and better practices are relieving the need for that stuff to occur. And there's the occasional hanger on who's like, they kind of dig the heroics and like, man, there's things that you could be way more proud to be heroic on than racking and deploying metal, right?
It's, you know, this has been what's sad from our perspective, is that, you know, there's a lot of, every data center is a snowflake, and usually not for bad reasons, usually for, you know, reasonable reasons. And we just didn't build that into our automation. And so everybody redid the same work over and over and over again. And then you get the vendor problem where Dell doesn't want to help you run HPs and the, all right, I get it. But, and so we, you know, we end up with, you know, a lot of heterogeneity that is useful heterogeneity, but very expensive. You know, we've let it get very expensive because we kept fixing it one by one by one. I don't know how many times I hear this, right? Oh, don't worry about, you know, we don't have a data center problem because we're just going to keep buying the same model server forever. And we're going to write our on that one model server. And, you know, you can call them up 3 months later and you're like, hey, how's that going? They're like, oh, the vendor changed the NIC on us and we can't get that server with the same NIC anymore. And now our, you know, our driver, we have two images now for driver, you know, because the NIC drivers are different. It's just, you got to build that into the plan. And then put something like, you know, we'll go full VMware promotion, right? Then you put something like VMware on top of it, and then everything is, you know, E0 and, you know, virtualized hardware, and you don't have to worry about that again. That's sort of where the world has lived. We just, it doesn't handle, oh, I have a, yet another out of order execution vulnerability, and I need to patch my BIOS again and reinstall VMware. And oh, they changed the, they're famous for this. They changed the install ICO with different vendor requirements, and now it doesn't install. You know, I have to patch it before I install it, which they need to do. It's not a bad thing, but you know, now you're stuck. You have to you either fit patch and upgrade or stay on an old rev.
And the other thing that's very important, that when people go to VMworld or any major event, right, of course, when you watch the keynote, it's always these incredible stories. And they're these huge environments. And like, when they talk about stuff at scale, I'm like, at scale is a scary word for a lot of people, because if I've got, you know, 40 hosts in my environment, every solution that I look at, if I watch these keynotes, is going to be, you know, 2,000 servers in each data center. And it's there's always a sense that, well, oh, of course they did this because they have thousands of hosts or hundreds and hundreds of hosts. And like, you've got four, it's time to automate, right? Unless you're deploying once by hand and then never touching it, there's a reason to automate it. There's a reason to think about, can I make this repeatable? Like you said, that problem of, well, we're just going to buy the same server. Well, that the day will come when you can't get that, even if you've been guaranteed it. I've purchased servers at significant scale with literal contractual guarantees about availability of hardware from major three-letter vendors, and 6 months later, you go to buy it and they're like, well, if you actually read the contract, it says that we would support the existing and we'll provide firmware and we'll provide compatibility. And it's like, okay, like we got bitten because we thought it would always be the same. And so we learned. And I think there's a great chance for all of us to learn.
And the thing that's interesting to me from what you're describing is you just described an edge data center, though, right? There's a lot of people now who, when they say I have 1,000 servers, right, they're starting to realize that it's the use cases. I have 1,000, you know, I have 254 machine clusters, right? and so, you know, it's a very real, you know, small needs to work. It's actually in some ways more important, especially when you start talking about multi-site consistency and automation, because you have less footprint for operational overhead from that perspective. And in those cases, heterogeneity is going to be really high up, because if you're distributing, you know, lots of environments, you might not be able to get the servers in China, or right. You might have to source, you know, something else in another location and plan on it being, you know, maybe if you're doing that, you're buying lower cost gear. You're not buying the platinum double diamond hardware spec that you would like, you know, that they would want you to buy for the VX rail.
But and it's also the other thing of we treat it as like, well, you're buying brand or you're buying commodity. And let's say, okay, commodity, you mean Supermicro, like, which is a brand. At this point, it's like saying RC Cola is not a brand.
It is a brand, but I would argue that even Dell, right, if you're not buying off of VMware's SKU list, a Dell is a commodity server.
Right.
And so, right, I know the people in the converged infrastructure space, you know, made a lot of hay early on by being very prescriptive on the systems that you bought, and that was, they solved a lot of the problems you and I are talking about by appliancizing this. But those aren't commodity servers. It's, you know, when you move to a commodity server, it's, you're off that premium SKU. And a lot of times it's not just that it's a commodity server, then you've freed yourself from a SAN backplane.
Right.
Cause that to me is one of the big differences. If you're talking about a fiber channel infrastructure in the backplane or a high grade network, to do a SAN backed virtual infrastructure, those are not commodity servers. Those are premiums.
Yeah, it may have all the bits of a commodity server, but it's got a matching HCL. It's got a different support system wrapped around it. It's, you know, commodity goes up to the services tier, and people forget that commodity isn't just the SKUs that you buy. It's of the hardware. There's the total package will indicate whether it's commodity. The fact whether you can buy it, I don't say you have to be able to buy it at Best Buy in order to call it commodity, but at least you've got to be able to buy it at a more generic way and mix and match here and there. And one thing, this is we're going to do a post show on it, and you are, I'm sure you and I will have good things to talk about AWS Outposts featuring VMware Cloud Foundation relative to AWS's own, a choice to be native EC2 on Outpost. So I don't know what the dates are for announcements. I'm assuming that somewhere on one of those keynote stages in San Francisco that VMware will have a public customer story about their Outpost implementation. I'd just be curious to see what comes. So that's, you know, that's as prophetic as I can get.
Yeah, we would need to rate the likelihood of firmness from marketing fluff to rock solid on the scale. I'm going to be super interested on that. The Outposts announcement at AWS was very future oriented fluff side. I'm sure I know that there's real stuff there and real engineers working on it and trying to build stuff. I also have watched Azure Stack took, you know, much longer to get even the basics working than they expected. So
yeah,
so maybe Amazon did find that vein of operations Inium up there for Outpost. I'd be curious.
Only available in those Pacific Coast mountains. That's exactly right. I had a good chat with Ben Kehoe on a recent podcast on that. It was, we had a Twitter conversation that He called me out on the lack of ability to be descriptive and nuanced. Twitter doesn't give you a lot of room, and he what? Spotted me and called me. So I was like, all right, you're right. I did not give the right level of detail on this. It would be super cool if we could have a conversation, and we did. And so that was Ben's actually super cool. We had a good long chat on a bunch of things around serverless and outposts, and he and I, funny, we both said what we're talking about now, people are going to listen to this show maybe in 5 months ago, these guys are idiots. This is not what it is, because we were going off of, you know, what isn't real yet.
Yeah, no, that's marketing. Marketing isn't easy. It's never been easy, but it's certainly faster to deliver marketing than it is to deliver a product.
Now the other thing, so obviously at the event, again, if you're coming to VMworld, you want to get out, you want to talk to folks on the ground, you want to listen to the stories, go out to find as much sort of community related stuff. There's a ton of really strong community focused folks there. There's the VMware hosts a lot of community events in and out of the event center. There's a team called V Brown Bag. So they usually have, they have their own like communities oriented talks that are going on. It's kind of like the unconference that's happening in the conference. It's usually in the community lounge. So you'll see like 10-minute presentations from folks on a ton of subjects. They're publicly available. They actually stream live usually. So it's really cool. And of course, there's my last sort of shameless plug for my own activities I'm doing beyond the daily VFit runs, the Community Coffee Exchange. So this started a couple of years ago at VMworld. A good friend of mine, Cody Bunch, you know Cody, and folks that are listening may know Cody. He's super cool, done a ton of stuff for the community, and he decided to do this coffee exchange a few years ago. And so people just come and bring like a pound or 2 pounds of their locally roasted coffee and just bring them in. And then we would sort of roll dice and choose who gets to take away which ones on the other side. So you'd bring two, you take two. And it was kind of neat. And then he wasn't going to the following VMworld a couple of years ago. So I said, hey, I'll take this one on. I'll run the Community Coffee Exchange. So I did it, and I hosted it at the Turbonomic booth. And what ended up happening was we had a pretty good uptake, so much so that we actually had 24 people that brought in between 1 and 2 pounds. We had 44 pounds of coffee that changed hands. I probably have to get some kind of actual license to do this at this point. So that's what it is. If you want to come in and you want to taste some coffee from around the world, just, you know, I'll include the link for the sign-up form. So if you just go to discoposse.com, I'll have the link there. So you can sign up, say, I'm going to bring 1 or 2 bags of beans. You bring them to me at the booth, or bring them to my team at the booth. And then a day or two later, you come back and you grab what you took. So if you bring one, you take one. If you bring two, you take two. And it's a chance to literally try. People come from all over the world and they bring coffee beans. So you get to test stuff out. And it was so cool. I've done it actually at every event now, to the point where my team, it's famous. They say like, oh, so are we doing the coffee thing again this year? Like they just see these random people showing up to the booth with armloads of coffee. So it's kind of fun.
That's awesome.
So hopefully I can count on you, Rob, to bring some of Austin's finest, and it would be neat to see. You guys have got a lot of really good local roasters, but
yeah, I'll find something colorful.
Maybe so there you go. So really, this is what I enjoy is no matter what's going on the stage, what's going on off the stage is really founded in the strength of community. There's a strong technical group. There'll be a hackathon, which I'm aiming to be at. In fact, I hope to lead a team at, which is going to be a lot of fun. It's a little bit crazy, but it's enjoyable. My virtual design master team, we're doing an online hackathon before it to try and excite people about the idea that they can actually go to a hackathon, even if they aren't developers. So we're really trying to like open up inclusivity for hackathons. It's kind of like hackathons for ops. So I'm hoping to bring at least one team there and get some people involved. So who knows? Maybe I'll recruit some of you and your team, Rob. you guys have like legit development chops, and but you know, it would be good even just to get some advice from you on how folks can approach stuff like that when they kind of come from.
We have somebody on the team named Mike Rice who's done some V Brown bags, and he's literally building the VMware agent.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, he's way down deep in the weeds right now, but we'll have to see about pulling him in, some of the other team members. We have a pretty active community ourselves, and a lot of people like to do ESX and happy to play with you and try and figure out the right way to get something done. So
yeah, cool. and your team but, as well.
Like you started the show with, it's not a startup budget show. It's definitely a premium in that location. So
that's true. Yeah. So the other thing as well, let's talk about your community side stuff. I saw that you're kicking up the online meetups again. So that was cool. And you shared kind of, you want to talk about that and what your aim is around that.
Yeah. So we have a Slack community around Digital Rebar. It's, you know, it's the open source core of what we do. And there's a ton of people in that community playing around, you know, doing everything from just doing better Pixie boots and automation to playing with the self bootstrapping Kubernetes pieces. We've dusted off some of our Ansible work where you can create dynamic inventories out of Ansible, and we're about to create a stage that'll do a single node Ansible run. All those things are community stuff, so they're super accessible for people who just sort of want to look at ways to build more integrated workflows. And we'd love to have people come in and start playing. Every once in a while, we see some really cool stuff. You had highlighted on Twitter, we had somebody in the Kubernetes, in the what we call Crib, our Kubernetes Rebar integration, that somebody actually did a Vault secrets automatic unlock. It's insane. And we've gotten to a point where it's like 3.14, we're about to release 3.14. And so the feature set and some of the maturity of things that we've been building into the system, just like it's those fine details, like some of the filtering that we can do now, secure parameters, and you know, like you can actually secure data in the back end. That should be normal stuff. It's amazing how much, you know, people just don't have ways to secure information that they're using to provision systems. Sad. So there's a ton of ways to get in and play, and we're about to redo our Terraform integrations too. So if people want a Terraform metal, we're about to reset that to version 2 and make Terraforming metal. Or you can already do it with version 1, but we need a whole another hour to talk about Terraform and pay problems.
But, a little more care and feeding required.
Version 2 will not have the distributed state, the single source of truth problems that you can get into with Terraform. So there's tons of stuff for people to play with and get involved in. We're in a lot of data centers, so we hit all sorts of wrinkles. Everything, you know, ARM, we do ARM stuff. We actually can netboot Max. Crazy stuff that people ask for sometimes. So.
Nice. Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. Like it's the stuff that you don't realize, and like people are trying to dabble in it, and you hear like little mini sort of, you know, projects that are going on, and like you know, it's going on in one spot. Come take a look. So, and I was going to say, if you don't celebrate the release of 3.14 with a whole bunch of pies, then I'm going to be disappointed.
That sounds like a good idea. We did 3.13 on April Fool's Day. So I'm like, that wasn't the most auspicious release plan, but we'll definitely do some pie pun and pie joke type of thing. It'll be an amazing release. There's some rack-end content that comes out on Edge, some Edge capabilities around multi-site management that we're going to start making some noise about, and you should hear more rack-end stuff as we pull together those feature sets. We've been sort of quiet over the summer, heads down with customers. So.
It's a good, that's good words to hear. You know, it's when you see the growth and the importance of what you're doing and you're seeing the customer side work that's going on, and just the fact that you share that back and you bring it back to the community is, is one of the many of many reasons why I have a huge respect for you and your team. So it's a pleasure to watch it go on and watch it get the attention it deserves.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
So VMworld will be here. We will be in San Francisco. We will be jogging along at a nice talkative pace every morning at about 6:45-ish. We'll publish. Like I said, go to discoposse.com. You can find the details. If you love coffee, bring coffee. Well, there's details. There's a sign-up form that I'm going to publish there as well. And I'm actually doing some shirts for the running group, which is cool because a few people have asked us to do this. So I actually had a good friend, D. Abson, who... he's at D-E-E Abson, A-B-S-O-N, who he did the design for the front of the shirt. So we're sharing that out. We've got, it's like a custom ink thing. So if you want to buy a shirt, it basically literally just pays for the shirt. And any extra money that does come through, it's been treated as a fundraiser. It goes back towards the Virtual Design Master community. So we're using it to generate prize money for folks that are entering the hackathon. So everything's like 100% wash back to the community. This is no dollars go into my pocket. In fact, a lot of dollars leave my pocket in order to make these things happen. But I'm happy to do so because you hear the positive stories on the other side, and it makes it worth it. So and same with the coffee stuff.
It's worth noting for the custom inks, the way they do that, these fundraisers, where you actually get the shirt directly to you. So you don't have to. There's no logistics of like collecting the shirt from Eric at the show. It's that you buy it, they mail it directly to the person. It's a really nice service that they put together. I've tried to do a couple of designs that way, but you have to get to their limit. So
you do. Hey, tell you what, I'm looking down and I see myself. I've got my Rakan Cloud shirt still, the beautiful red shirt. I remember you did a run of those ones, and I guess we didn't make the minimums or whatever, and you said I'm going to do it anyways, and so yeah, I still roll around with that shirt.
We have some great classic designs.
It'll be good. So definitely, and also in the community area, go and if you're a sticker fan, come get stickers. And this is for you, Rob. Make sure you bring a boat ton of stickers. Drop them off. So the Rebar is one of my favorite stickers. I love the bear sticker. Just fire those in. So you go to the community lounge and there will be a bloggers area, and it will be littered with stickers. And it's a blast. So there's a lot of great folks there. If you're attending and you've ever read a VMware related blog, the person who wrote it is going to be sitting at one of those tables most likely, which is kind of,
that's a good to know. One of my original, co-founders for one of my first startups is now the VM blog, author, David Marshall. So.
Oh, nice. Yes. Yes. I was going to say that I'm like VM blog me the, I know David. Yeah. Good person. One of the great folks he will be at the event rolling around. So very, very cool. Awesome.
He was there in 99 when we were building the first VMware data center. And I don't mean our first. I mean, the first.
The first. That's right. That's OG. That's the real deal. So nice. Well, Rob, again, where do folks go if they want to hear about the pre-VMworld or where they can find you at VMworld?
Oh boy, I'm a hallway track type of person. So the best thing to do is ping me on Twitter. Zehicle, Z-E-H-I-C-L-E is a good way to do it. And if you follow that, then you'll get a lot of the Rakan news. Rakan Go is the Twitter handle for Rakan. Digital Rebar has its own Twitter. But we cross pollinate, the three. So if you're following me, you'll get the news. And of course come to Rakan, and join our Slack community. We'd love to have you in talking about real physical ops and how we solve problems there. So it's good stuff.
Very, very cool. Awesome. Well, and again, so for folks who want to find out about my craziness, you can go to discoposse.com. You'll see about the runs, the coffee exchange. Here, I'm going to be at Microsoft Ignite doing the same thing and at reInvent. So it's going for the trifecta this year.
I'm always at reInvent doing the hallway track too. So I will definitely be running with y'all there. And I should have mentioned, we also co-host our own podcast. So Steven Spector and I run a podcast. It's a little bit different than this one, called The Latest Shiny, where we focus on edge infrastructure, We talk about some of the open source commercialization challenges that people are having. Those are, you know, we've been sort of very focused on those topics, sometimes physical infrastructure, sometimes some other things, but it's deep tech type show. No, the sort of the 201 level and beyond type stuff. The do your homework is our catchphrase for the podcast.
Nice. Yeah, rightly so. I don't know how I made the call sheet for that one a couple of times. Then clearly you went back to 101 by letting me on. I like that. Awesome. Well, thanks again, Rob. We will see you at the event. And for folks, again, listen, we'll have more podcasts leading up to other activities that are going on at VMworld. Make sure you drop by, say hi. I'll be at the Turbonomic booth. I believe it's 2033. I may be wrong, but just find the Turbonomic booth and you'll hear me touting the things that I do there and you know, come and hang out, grab a drink, grab a coffee, go for a run, and we'll see you all around San Francisco.
You're listening to Disco Posse Pod.